Adding the choice of a crispy chicken BLT to Wendy's 4-for-4 is the biggest thing since rappers trying to sing.
I got me a yacht and I sound like a robot.
But do you like the sound of this? Wendy's 4-for-4 now comes with a choice of a junior bacon cheeseburger or a crispy chicken BLT.
From Detroit to Macon, I keep it crisp like bacon.
Both are topped with crispy applewood smoked bacon and come with 4 nuggets, fries, and a Coke for just $4.
Oh, yeah.
At participating Wendy's for a limited time, meal includes small fries and a drink. Not valid in Alaska and Hawaii.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spiritual Insights with Charlotte Spicer. Spirituality and Metaphysics Talk Radio, featuring A Course in Miracles, Dream Interpretation, Guided Meditation, and the Psychic and Metaphysics Free-for-All. It's your opportunity to consult with a professional psychic medium, discuss past lives, the chakras, and more. We are non-denominational, and there are no limits. Want to change your life? You must first change your mind. No matter your religious structure, cultivate peace in your reality through self-awareness with an authentic spiritual teacher. And now, your host, Charlotte Spicer.
Welcome to Spiritual Insights, everyone, to all of our listeners in the United States and around the world. Today, I have a very special segment for you. I am joined by a very special guest who will share his deep knowledge of out-of-body experiences. His name is Darrell E. Berry, Jr., and he is a longtime practitioner, researcher, and observer of all things metaphysical, mystical, and cutting-edge, including the out-of-body experience, also known as astral travel. And he can speak knowledgeably about so many different things, such as conscious development, channeling, telepathy, spirituality, including A Course in Miracles, extraterrestrial life, and fourth density thought. You can read about dozens of his out-of-body experiences, also referred to as OBEs, and learn how to initiate an out-of-body experience on your own through his book, Travel Far, A Beginner's Guide to the Out-of-Body Experience. This book is incredible. I am reading it now, and it includes firsthand accounts of his experiences, which began at a very early age. And it also presents comprehensive theory and methods that you can use to initiate an experience for yourself. The book is available now, and if you purchase the paperback version on Amazon, the digital Kindle version comes free. He also has a second book available called Classes on A Course in Miracles, Contemporary Pure Non-Dualism, Discussions 1 through 12. That's also available on Amazon. Darrell is the founder and CEO of Next Density and is currently building a center called Next Density Center through which to share what he's learned. You can visit his websites as you're listening to learn more, which are DarrellEBerryJr.com and NextDensity.com. That's N-E-X-T, Density.com. You can learn more about what he's doing and hear additional interviews. And just to let you know, he is offering a two-month OBE intensive online course and also conducts other workshops and speaking engagements. As always, everyone, I'd love to hear your thoughts on today's segment. Please visit spiritualinsightsradio.com and send a testimonial about the show, and you'll receive a free guided meditation MP3 that allows you to make profound changes in your life and may also help you with your practice if you do practice or want to practice out-of-body experiences. No experience is necessary for the meditation, and please join me in welcoming my special guest, Darrell. Hi, Darrell. It's so great to have you on the show.
Hey, awesome. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Thanks for getting in touch with me. I know I shared this with you on the phone, but I kind of wanted to give the listeners an idea of how things happen and how we can recognize synchronistic events. I had woken up on a Sunday morning a few weeks ago, and I was just thinking to myself, God, I wish I had someone I could talk about out-of-body experiences with on the show, get a really great conversation going and share some of my experiences. I don't get to talk about that very often. And I just lay there. I said, well, okay, I'll just let it go. You never know. And a little while later, I got up, went to my computer, and here was a message from Darrell asking to be on the show and telling me all about his experience and his many years of research. So I thought that was really cool that I got that message on that day, and then we just took it from there.
Awesome. And it was pretty synchronistic on my end as well, because I was just sitting there thinking, you know, I should probably do an interview. And I can't even really say how in particular I found your site, but I was just looking for related radio shows, and I was like, ah. And you're actually the only show I contacted. It was like it just seemed like this is the one to contact. So it seems like it's just, you know, I love synchronicity, but I'm starting to find as I start to implement these progressive concepts in my life more and more, synchronicity starts to become just a way of life. And I think that's the way it's going to eventually be for those who choose to integrate what I call the four density principles, what the ETs call the four density principles, because synchronicity is basically the way the universe works now. It's just that we use our synchronicity to make it seem like things are difficult to match our views of the world. So
right.
It's awesome that we have the experience of the positive side of synchronicity.
Yeah, that's well said. Well said. Well, thank you for the copy of the book. I'm almost about halfway through, but I have gone through other sections. You put this together really well. I really like the way it's structured, and
awesome.
The way you write, the way you express is digestible, and you write beautifully, but in thinking is how would a student take this, this is very digestible material that even a beginner could wrap their mind around, make sense of, and start to practice everything that you suggest. I love it. It's terrific.
That's right. That's right. And that actually comes from research as well, because I don't really promote it often because I know it's not mainstream accepted, but I really consider myself a scientist. And before I ever wrote Travel Far, even though I have my own decades of experiences and I've taught people, you know, one off throughout the years. But in 2012, I decided to have a research study where I said, look, anybody who wants to have out-of-body experiences, whether you're brand new to it or you're having problems, let me know, and I'll invite you into this research study and teach you these techniques because I want to validate the techniques and just validate that they work in the group setting, anticipating teaching and especially anticipating putting out a book. I just wanted to make sure that the techniques work. And just like any validated thing, that's a common practice in science, it has to be reproducible. So, you know, about 20 people joined, but not everybody stuck with it, of course. Different people got busy with their jobs or whatever. But everybody who stuck with and applied the Travel Far techniques had progress. Everyone had progress. Everyone at least had the altered state phenomena. They were out-of-body experiences reported. Several, one had a full out-of-body experience where they saw a non-physical entity, which she thought may have been her father that died. So that's one of the reasons why it translates so well, because it's based upon actual research and teaching people and seeing the problems that people have and developing from that the understanding, because basically the format of the 2-month course is based upon that 2-month research study. I took that research study and said, okay, this is what I did, this is how I work, and of course I improved it since then, but that's why it's 2 months, because the study was 2 months.
Okay. That's understandable.
We want
information we can validate so that we can reproduce those results. So it's brilliant.
Exactly.
I do see you as a scientist as I read through it. You sound like a scientist, and yet I do feel that you're all heart too. Do you feel, Daryl, that everybody has to be on a certain spiritual level to make progress in this metaphysical arena? What are your thoughts on that correlation?
No, definitely not. That's a common misunderstanding, because I often get contacted by people who are wanting to learn out-of-body experience for spiritual reasons. And spirituality and out-of-body experience of psychic powers are two totally different things. Now, the fact is, spiritual growth, because it offers an expansion, it offers inclusiveness. You know, as you grow spiritually, you start to recognize everyone is one, for instance. That starts to let down barriers in the mind. So it's very commonplace for spiritually adept people to have psychic powers. They call them sadis in the inner tradition, for instance. But you could develop a psychic power and be totally horrible as a person. You know, one of the things that you start to be able to do as you start to develop, not only are you able to get out of body and have psychic powers yourself, but you start to perceive non-physical entities, including other out-of-body explorers. And one time I got visited by, there's a group of people who call themselves psychic vampires, and they actually go out of body and and parasite people's energy with the out-of-body state. So that's definitely not a spiritual mindset. It's totally all wrong. All they're doing is sabotaging their own energy systems, which perpetuates them wanting to do it over and over again. But you could definitely develop the powers and abilities without having a spiritual mindset. You know, it's really just a form and method of perception. Now, the thing is, everything can be applied spiritually. So it's a form or method of perception that can definitely be applied towards spiritual growth. For instance, I've used it to learn about alternate lives. I've went into altered states and seen my different lifetimes, which means that, I mean, that totally eradicates racism. You know, when you know that you've been a dark-skinned person or a light-skinned person and an Oriental and a Western person, there's no more racism after that. You know, I've used it to, for instance, go and visit these high, extremely high vibratory realms and high-level realms and meet beings that just infuse you with love and acceptance. Then when you come back into the physical dimension, I mean, it definitely changes your perspective when you have that experience. But the experience itself was just an experience. I mean, by the same fashion, I went to demonic realms and seen very low-level beings. So there's some people who, you know, I imagine they go out and try to find demons to control. I mean, there's magic based upon that, trying to control demons and stuff. So it can be applied in various different ways, but it is in itself just a tool, and that could be applied in various ways.
Right, that's what I wanted to add, that it's a tool that you can use to augment or expand your spiritual awareness, because there are so many beautiful, profound experiences you can have. There are some negative experiences you can have, but I would think that all of them lend themselves to a learning opportunity that can help you grow.
Right.
And in just the understanding that, number one, everybody is capable of this. We all do it on a regular basis. And it's just that we go to such a subtle realm of energy, it's difficult to bring a memory, a solid memory of that back. You know, some people are very adept at remembering their dreams, or at least most of them. But when it comes to this, you're going to that higher vibration, and it's a little more difficult to bring a recollection of it back down to this dense energy level. But we all do it. It's just a matter of practice, and Daryl and I are going to go into that in a little bit. Would you want to tell us about your first experience? I love that story.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's still, I guess it's still one of my favorite OBEs because, you know, one of the common questions or concerns people have is, well, how do you know it's real? How do you know you're not just, you know, making it up? And the thing about that experience is I had no foreknowledge to make anything up. Like in remote viewing, they talk about the pre-knowledge and when I go in blind. Well, I was absolutely blind. I was about 4 or 5 years old. I started to feel very heavy and lethargic. It was around dusk. I mean, it was too early for sleep, but it was early enough where I didn't alert my mom when I told her I'm not, you know, feeling so well, I'm going to go ahead and lay down. Mm-hmm. And when I went and laid down, as I was walking to the bed, I started to get heavier and heavier to the point that I was literally dragging myself to the bed. By the time I got to the bed, I just plopped myself onto the bed and laid down and went to sleep. And at some point in the night, I don't know how much time went by, I started to feel extremely well, you know, so well that I thought, you know, let me get up and tell my mom I'm feeling so well. I felt awesome. I felt full of energy. And I got up. I went to go to the door. I went to go to leave the room to tell my mom I'm feeling well. But when I went to open up the door, my hand went through the doorknob. And shocked, I went to go reach for the doorknob again, and my hand went through the doorknob again.
Yeah,
and
you look at your
I looked
hand,
back
look at
the
doorknob. Yeah, you're looking at both of them like, what?
Just,
what happened?
Yeah. Going on. And an interesting thing about this is I did not know I was non-physical until my hand went through the doorknob, and that's how visceral the non-physical body can be at times. You know, sometimes I've been out of body and I've been, you know, it's like you can't, of course, sometimes you really don't have a non-physical body per se. One of my early experiences, and sort of a tangent, but I'll get back to the main story.
Okay.
If you look at the cover of Travel Far, you'll see there's a symbol there. There's like a oval circle at the bottom, and there's a slightly less oval circle, and then there's a little dot at the top.
Right.
And one of my experiences, I became aware floating, which I often did, just floating towards the ceiling. But the odd thing was I didn't have a body. I was just, I don't know what I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I just seemed to be, when I put my attention towards myself, just a field of energy or a point of consciousness. And I saw my non-physical body floating at the ceiling like I normally did, and I saw my physical body on the bed. So I found that we really are a tripartite being. We have consciousness, non-physical body, and physical body. And the non-physical body can be so dense that it can seem physical. So when I was walking towards the door, I thought I was in my physical body. I really did. And after my hand went to the doorknob and I looked back towards the bed in shock, I noticed a lump on the bed that I surmised was my physical body. That's when I realized what was going on. And this time I was, you know, sort of frantic. I'm wanting to try to get some assistance. I don't know what was going on because, again, I didn't read anything about this. I didn't hear anything about this. You know, my parents
were 5 years old.
Yeah, 4 or 5. Yeah, something like that. I mean, I could have even been 3. I don't even know the exact age, but around 4 or 5 years old. And I walked through the door figuring, you know, my hand went through the door. Now my hole in me can go through the door. And I made a complete beeline to the kitchen. And the way our house was built at the time, it was like a U. So basically it was like you know, there's the front room when you first walk into the front door, and then there's a wall, and on either side, to the right of that wall, there's a bedroom, so to the left is like the kitchen and everything, and all the plumbing and everything is in the exact center.
Okay.
So I remember walking on a beeline through that block in the center of the house and feeling myself and seeing myself go through walls. I remember with a little bit of amusement that I was inside all the walls, and yet I had a glow coming off of me that was illuminating the area, which I thought was quite amusing. But I just kept on walking, and I got to the kitchen, and I saw my mom doing things in the kitchen, cleaning and things and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to call out to her, but no sound came from my throat. I couldn't even hear myself. And at some point, I lost awareness and ended up back in my body. And I went and told her about it, and she said, oh, you were just dreaming or whatever. But I was able to tell her everything she was doing. And at that time, so that was my first experience. And, you know, for me, it totally, and of course, over the years, I've did various validations as well as a second research study I can tell you about that I did last year to validate things. But that was validation for me. And, and it just went on from there.
Excellent. And well, you did a lot of the floating to the ceiling, and this became a natural occurrence for you. And it's interesting. I would assume you must have come into this life with the intention to explore this area, have it start so early. I started around 4.5, but my focus was dream work, and I worked on that for a number of years until the lucidity that I had developed made me aware that I was actually out of body and not on the planet. But you had a number of experiences before the age of 10. All of these that you have in your book, getting up to use the restroom. Which one
That's right.
do you like the best? I guess what's your favorite? Big Ben or
Beams of
Light?
All of them are good. I will say my favorite one is probably still seeing my future self, because I've yet to do that, and I'm starting to practice again, and I know what's going to happen. And I have my friend. A friend of mine who actually met my future self. There's a future me that's running around doing a lot of stuff. Now I'm starting to practice again so I can become this future self. One time I went to sleep as usual. And at this time, like I said, I was pretty used to floating out of body, and it was pretty much common sleeping at the ceiling at night.
Right.
And this time in particular, I kept rising. I felt myself, instead of stopping at the ceiling, continuing to go. And I was really still unconscious at the time. I was in a very semi-conscious state, that kind of state that you're in it's almost time to wake up and you're kind of waking up, or maybe you're snoozing in between hitting your alarm. But when I started passing through the ceiling, feeling the texture of the ceiling, that's what alerted me, like, oh, okay, I'm floating. And I didn't even call it out of body at the time. I didn't even have a name for it. It was just what happened. So I just knew, okay, it's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I continued to float, and I floated through the ceiling and through the roof of the house. And now eventually I'm like 2 stories in the air looking down at the roof of the house. And I look up and I see the stars in outer space, and I'm just certain that I'm going to be lost in space. Because at this time, it's all new to me.
Mm-hmm.
Every time something new happens, I have no idea what's going on. I don't know how it's going to end. So I'm terrified, thinking I'm going to literally be lost in space. I don't know what's going to happen. And I look to the side, and I see me. I see a future me hovering in the air looking at me, looking similar to how I look right now. just looking at me with this very wise and fearless perspective. And that's one of the most drawing moments I've ever had in an out-of-body experience, seeing myself from the future looking at me. And I was just looking at him, looking at me back. And just the shock of it shook me out of my terror, and eventually it ended. And that was just a very striking experience. And you know, very regularly, I guess, I would think back to when I'm going to become that person that does that, and I'm starting to work towards that now. And like I said, just recently, one of my friends that was in my recent research study told me, "Hey, I saw you," and apparently, you know, I have several things going on at that time. And so it was a pretty exciting experience. We could talk about the other ones as well.
I have a quick question for you, actually. I had a similar experience where I saw my future self. And the first thing that struck me was, why is my hair like that? But there was something I observed. And I was smiling. My future self was smiling at me. And I noticed an air of happiness. I noticed an air of peace. And there was just this knowing. It was almost like a telepathic transmission. Don't worry, it is going to be okay, and you're going to feel great about yourself by the time you reach me. Did you feel that way when you saw your future self? Did you feel empathically any type of message or inner knowing?
I didn't get any message or inner knowing. I just looked at just his. I don't even know which program to use. His demeanor just said it all. It's just the look on his face, the calm. It's just the demeanor that he had just said it all. I didn't even need to get, and it could be that a telepathic message was coming, and I was just, you know, I went from being in absolute terror thinking I was going to be lost in space into shock seeing myself. So it could have been, I was blocking out the communication because I wasn't in such a calm, you know, frequency or state of mind at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But just how he was looking at me was enough, even if I was not able to pick up any telepathic communication. It just let me know that, wow, I mean, he was very advanced, very, very progressed, very in control of his being. You know, it was just awesome, you know, and just to know that I'm going to end up there, you know. But, of course, that doesn't mean that I could just sit on my laurels, you know. I'm starting to work on various aspects and get into my practices now to make sure I get there.
Now, he was definitely adult and you were a child at the time?
Say again?
Now, he was definitely an adult and you were a child at the time, or were you a little older?
Definitely. He looked like I look right. He didn't have gray hair. He looks pretty much how I look now, actually. You know?
Okay. Yeah, I was an adult
course,
when
you know,
I had mine, but my hair is cut the way it was in that experience. It's cool.
But I do have to throw one caveat out, though. Like, one thing as well is, and I've seen this commonly across my research, generally, even after someone dies, the form that they take in the non-physical is their appearance at about 30 years old. So, I mean, even then, I guess I can't really say for sure that it was me in this life while I was still alive, even though my friend gave me indication that it is. But, you know, we can't really look at the appearance of our future out-of-body self and judge from that the age that they are visiting us at, because they can be elderly and still visit us and look that way. So let me just make sure I throw that caveat out. But I can just say that he did look the way I look about right now, and I'm in my mid-30s.
I see what you're saying. So the essence itself could have been older, but it could have projected his appearance at or around the age of 30, which is basically our apex or high point. It's generally everybody's best healthy state. You know, for whatever reason, that's what most people, after they transition, prefer to go back to the way they looked at that age before we hit our 40s, you know what I mean?
Exactly. I don't even think it's really. I think it's just a natural. If you don't consciously maintain yourself as an elderly person, for instance, you just naturally start to morph into that age of appearance. That just seems to be the general age of people, appearance at that period of time. Unless someone is mere reincarnating, then they will morph themselves into the childhood appearance that they will have. Like, for instance, I remember having an experience. I didn't make it into the book because it was a very short experience, but.
Okay.
I was suddenly aware before I incarnated. And I'm looking at this monitor with this being sitting next to me, and I'm in a child appearance, how I looked as a child, but I didn't incarnate yet. But I'm seeing on this monitor, sort of on the ground, I'm seeing my life play out. I'm seeing my entire life play out like I'm looking at a movie.
That's really cool.
And I'm
cool.
looking at the being next to me. Yeah, and I'm like, that's what I'm going to be doing. He's like, yeah, that's you. And I'm just looking at myself. Everything that's going on now, I'm looking at myself. And the interesting thing about it is sometimes I will have mental contact with him. Like, let's say I'll be sitting here. And something will happen, and I will have a telepathic contact, and I'm aware of him looking at me, and he's aware of me thinking back to him. It's so interesting. But I'm still sitting there looking at this life play out while I'm living it. It's quite interesting.
Right.
But
it is, but it matches my understanding of how the process works. It's just remarkable that you have that much detail that you can report. And you know what? I think experiences like that, your experiences are extremely advanced, but this, I feel, supports you in all that you're doing, your research, building this center, writing your books. You have more books that you're planning next year and the year after. I mean, there's just so much in you that you still need to express, but to have a foundation like bring me a sense of comfort to know that it's okay. You watched this movie before you came here, so you know you turn out all right. Do you feel a sense of comfort from that?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. But that's not really necessary because, you know, I do A Course in Miracles, and a lot of people misunderstand the course and they think I'm somehow more advanced or something just because of out-of-body experience. But again, out-of-body experience is not a spiritual phenomenon, and you can actually get the same certainty just by letting go of your unconscious guilt, because the real reason why people are disquieted, it's not because they don't know what the future says, because, you know, going on that same example, I still have trepidation. I still have fear, because in that moment when my unconscious guilt comes up to the surface, all of that goes out the door, and I'm just projecting my unconscious guilt, and I experience that fear and that upset and so on and so forth. So it doesn't really matter what experience you have. If you don't heal that unconscious guilt, you will still have things to be afraid about and upset about and so on and so forth. I would say that when I do choose inner peace, that's one of the mechanical world experiences that lends credence to that sense of well-being and that sense of knowing it's going to be all right. But you're going to be still absolutely oblivious to the past and to the future and still know that you will be all right, because you know that you're what you are, your essence is totally beyond what can be hurt. Because that's what fear is usually about, some kind of way I'm going to be hurt. You know, I'm not going to have enough money at retirement. I'm going to be starving. I'm not going to be feeling well. I'm going to be ill at ease. I'm not going to have enough to eat. Or you know, this person is going to hurt me, whether it's the tyrannous government or whether it's the man that I see walking down the street in front of me. It's always some sort of fear of being harmed or hurt. But the more you get to understand that you are not anything that can be hurt, the more that peace comes in. And again, the tool of the out-of-body experience can be applied to that. But unless you actually apply yourself to true spiritual development, still there will always be some kind of foothold that fear can come into. Because if you look at people like Gary Randolph, for instance, he had a lifetime where he, in his experience, the non-physical realm was just as real or more real than the physical realm, right?
Yeah.
But because he did not undo the unconscious guilt, you know, he died, the guilt kicked in, and then he was born. He doesn't remember any of that. Of course, now he's starting to remember, you know. But all that information can be wiped away. So I just want people to know that, you know, which might be contrary to my spiel of trying to sell my books or whatever, but I like to stick with the facts and the truth. I just want people to know that you don't have to have the out-of-body experience to feel that peace, or have to have the out-of-body experience to be peaceful. You could do that just by changing the way you think. But it is a tool that can help facilitate that. But just being a master of out-of-body experience in itself is not going to do it. You really have to look at your judgments and your hatreds and really undo that deep inside to really ultimately feel that peace that doesn't go away no matter what.
I love it, because when I read that you studied A Course in Miracles, I was like, oh, my God, we can weave that in too? Oh, I was so excited. But yes, I mean, you know, letting go of all the fears and the guilt, that is most important. And then using this technique as a tool to disidentify with the body, because as you just demonstrated, and illustrated on the cover of your book, you were in that one experience where the focal point of consciousness, looking at your physical body and your non-physical. So the concept of self-identification with the body and the ego's attachment to the body has to really resonate with you at a deep level, because you not only got to see it through a metaphysical tool, spiritually you practice it through studying A Course in Miracles. And while we're on the subject, why don't you go ahead and tell me about your second book, The Classes on A Course in Miracles?
Certainly. It's really a transcript of classes I taught on A Course in Miracles, where either in person in my apartment or online through Skype or through phone, I would basically answer people's questions about the theory of the course, about the practices of the course, and it ended up running the gamut. So I think it's a very, very good introduction to true spirituality and A Course in Miracles, because some of the people who came to the class were brand new, and some people have been studying for years. So it runs the gamut of the introduction as well as some in-depth concepts. So if you want to have inner peace, if you want to know what the meaning of life is, then get the book Classes on A Course in Miracles, and it'll answer those questions. And it's chock full of knowledge. It's actually 6 inches by 9 inches, and it's actually 390 pages. So,
wow.
You know, you'll get an idea for, and I actually already have 13 through 24 already recorded. So maybe in a few years, if there's interest, I'll put that out. But I'm already getting positive feedback from people that have been reading it. So if you're really interested in spiritual attitude, that's what you'll want to get. And I really find it a really good plus that I have both, because so historically, like for instance, in the Indian tradition, they will teach that, you know, you have to ignore the sadhis. It's going to slow down your spiritual progress. And then on the other hand, some people think that sadhis are spiritual progress. You know, let me get these psychic powers and the spiritual progress. So I think one unique thing that my perspective gives me is that, being that I have a depth of experience in both, I can put them in perspective. And, you know, going back to about, for instance, the out-of-body state, that consciousness, I can let you know from experience that is still not letting go of the ego. That's a common misunderstanding. That's what I was saying earlier about the people when I would go out to see Kenneth Wapnick in California, and I would talk to some of the participants, and they thought that was spiritual. It's not. That consciousness that I exist in when I'm separate from my physical body and non-physical body, that's just as much ego-ridden as identifying with the physical body. Is still separate. It's still the distinction. So I've also had an experience where I existed as the mind that's projecting the entire universe. You know, I talk about it in the introduction in the classes on A Course in Miracles. And from this level of mind, everything is illusory. From that level of mind, the entire universe, every single, this self that I am, whether I call it a physical body, a non-physical body, or consciousness, it's just meaningless activity from that level of mind. So it doesn't matter what level of psychic powers you develop. It doesn't matter if you see yourself as consciousness, it's just as dividing and ego-bound as seeing yourself as a physical body. It's no different, because there's no hierarchy of illusions. Whether it's a physical body or it's a non-physical form of energy or it's a floating speck of thought, it's still a separate and distinct thing that's separate from other things that you could distinguish. I was still perceiving myself separate from my physical body. True spirituality, or God, there is no distinction at all. The Course says there's no mind, there's nothing distinct enough to be aware of something that's not itself. So it doesn't matter what form you're in. If you're distinct enough to perceive yourself as separate from anything else, you know that's not spiritual. It's just another aspect of the illusory dream world. But again, these experiences can be applied in ways. Like, for instance, I had an experience where this is before I started studying the course.
But when was that?
A period of time. I started studying the course in 2005.
Oh, okay.
Where it happened in like 2000, and my unconscious guilt was coming to the surface using the course's terminology, using everybody else's terminology. Life just sucks sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you feel bad. So I was like, I want to have some kind of relief in this. I want to know that there's something greater, and I decided to use my out of body skill to investigate this. So at this time, I was practicing pretty regularly, so it's easy as hell for me to get out. I was able to get out in like under a minute. And I kneeled down and I put my hands on the back of my palms and I searched for the source. I just wanted to know what the source was, because I had gotten out of religion. I didn't figure the source was God like religion spoke of. But people talked about this source, this, and I was like, where's the source? I need to find this source to find out. And I popped out of body and popped into this non-physical realm where we're just made of, I guess you could say, thought or energy. I don't know what the realm was made of. But it was like no realm I've been in before.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly before me was this entity or this being that was like a star that was radiating. And you could see these shards of light just radiating from it. And it was like a wave, like a shock wave from a supernova, you could even say.
Okay.
And when the edge of this wave hit me, it was just pure love and pure acceptance. If you could just think about the most pure love you can ever imagine and the most pure and total acceptance you could ever imagine. Because if you're in this world, you hate yourself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't want to hear, probably won't have the basis to understand that, but that's the fact. You hate yourself if you're here because of a whole lot of other things subconsciously. And that's what I felt at the time. Because
we teach the course here. Speak freely. We teach the course here. So
awesome.
They're
awesome.
Used to hearing me talk about, you know, self-loathing or, you know, people, you know,
awesome.
The world's full of a bunch of people running around who just don't like themselves, you know. We talk about the ego very often, so speak freely, be yourself.
Right. Awesome. As the Course says, we believe we're the home of evil, darkness, and sin. So when this love first hit me, it hit the surface of me, the surface of my psyche, and I was like, wow, I'm really digging this. But then I thought, it's going to find out. It's going to find out how horrible I am. It's going to find out how unworthy of love I am.
Uh-huh.
And I started to try to shield myself from it, just shut myself off. But this love and this acceptance just kept on coming. And when it reached the core depths of me, the part of me that is new, once it see this, like the Course says, it's going to reel away like seeing a serpent. It did not. And it just, when it reached the deepest core of me, it just passed through me. And layers of aura, of my aura that I didn't need, started to blow off. It was like a solar wind or like a nuclear blast. You've probably seen videos of that, and it blows away the buildings. Like layers of my aura was just blowing off. It was such a beautiful experience. And I can say that experience, that out-of-body experience, brought me an experience that did help my spiritual growth, because when I came back, in that moment I knew that source being, it loves and accepts everyone the same.
Uh-huh.
And I even teach about that in my course classes, you know, because, you know, you could put Hitler in front of that being and it will love and accept it just as
absolutely.
Totally. Just as
absolutely.
And what is that but the effect of perfect forgiveness, that absolute love and acceptance? So again, it can be applied to have experiences to, that had a profound effect upon me, you know?
Yeah.
And like I said, you still have to do your spiritual work. I only went there 3 times. I don't know what the effect would be of a couple ongoing, but by day 3, I wasn't depressed anymore.
Absolutely.
Yeah, before I went there, I was extremely depressed.
Well, here, let me clarify this for the listeners, Daryl. I know them pretty well, and I totally understand everything you're saying, but I just want to paraphrase what you just shared with us in a slightly different way so that they can get an accurate picture of what happened. So Daryl was standing in front of this entity that he identified as the source and was experiencing total love and acceptance, and then I guess when it got to where your heart, you know, to the heart, near your heart, and you thought, oh, I'm going to be rejected, and you were not, it passed through him, and he felt like there was some kind of explosion with layers of his aura flying off him. So tell me if you agree with this, the way I'm saying it, Daryl, but it was almost as if this love shattered a shell and a number of negative self-concepts he was holding about himself and holding himself in guilt and self-loathing peeled away and floated away, but in such a way that it felt like an explosion to you. Would you agree that those were negative self-concepts that no longer served you, that you could finally let go of and see yourself truly?
I never considered it negative self-concepts because I literally experienced it as layers of my aura. Now, what I would say is that let me back up.
Okay.
A common conception is that there's anything external to you that can really fundamentally change you. Proof of that is Jesus. He was a being of pure love and forgiveness, and they killed him. And they killed him. And, you know, Art and Persia talked about how he has such pure love and acceptance in him because at that point he was the manifestation of the Holy Spirit that some people couldn't look at him, meaning in his presence they had the same experience I had in front of the source. They
okay.
turned away. You see what I'm saying?
I do.
So, in their instance, being in his presence didn't automatically change their inner nature. So what I would say is, in my experience of being in front of that being, it taught me that I am lovable, at which I chose to let go of some of my self-concepts. No one else can do it for you. Now, the effect of that could be the form of that blowing away, but I just need to make sure that I point out that it's not going to be the case that you can become enlightened just by going and sitting in front of this pure being that's going to blow away all of my negativity. If you want to hold on to your negativity, then you will probably not let yourself get into that being's presence, just like people did with Jesus. They shut themselves off and left,
mm-hmm.
or they killed him. So I would not say, you know, I would say self-concepts did go away, but it's not because it blew the self-concepts away. It gave me the example that allowed me to choose to let go of my own self-concepts, which aligns directly with the Course. He says he's the perfect example of what you can be. Teach
right.
by example. He says whatever concepts that you accept, you will live by automatically, but you have to choose it yourself. You know, the main purpose and the main agenda of the miracle work is to choose the atonement for himself, but you have to choose it yourself. So, you know, I would say most of it was the energy aspect. It only really affected the energetic level, but it could symbolize my own choice to let go of some of my concepts because of the actual pure love that it was projecting.
I like that. I like that a lot. I'm glad I threw that question your way. That was a lot. That you just pulled more out of that experience for people to get a concept of. Okay. What did I want to share with you? When did you get to the point where I know a lot of yours were spontaneous. It was just happening to you when you were a kid. But when did you? How many years of practice? When did you get to the point where you could consciously step out of body?
Well, I would say around, let's say, 11 or 12. You know, I don't know the exact ages about all this, but let's say around 11 or 12, I got out of doing it. It's because I just got focused on the world and just, you know, I just stopped paying attention. And at some point, when I started to get consciously into metaphysics again, I realized what was going on, and that's when I found that I couldn't do it. Like, I couldn't just do it like I used to. So that's when I started to research, is when I started to really think about what I was doing. And over the years and over the decades, over a combination of research, like in Tribal Four, the bibliography is 150 books, and that's just the books I can remember and find. I mean, I didn't really plan on writing a book. It's just, you know, I mean, at this point, I have so much knowledge, I just can't help myself. I just, like you say, it's just coming out, you know.
Right.
But I did all this research and felt techniques, and I thought about my experiences. Like I say, we could talk about the dogma. There was a lot of dogma that's out there that was like, obviously that's not true because I had an experience outside of that. But as a combination of research and using that to think about what I did, I started to formulate how to make it happen. So I would say in my late teens is when I first started to really practice and start to put together a methodology. And the combination of having prior experience to judge people's writings from with extensive research allowed me to get to the heart of what is really going on. And what I found is that the foundation is this: no matter what technique you end up using, no matter what specific methodology you use, the foundation is what I call state acquisition. Whenever you have an out-of-body experience, you will enter the delta state of sleep. So scientists basically mapped our brains, the way they function, as far as they operate on different electric signals or frequencies fluctuating inside the brain at certain frequencies of speed. And the fastest speed, which is the one that we're in right now, was called beta. It's when you're fully awake, you're wide awake, you're walking around, you're doing things.
Right.
Alpha is the next state where you're slightly asleep. And even just watching a TV show or a movie, you're going to alpha. Just that state of non-thinking. Whenever you close your eyes, you start to produce more alpha. When you start to go into a light meditative state, you can see things like little prickles on the back of your eyelids. You'll feel more relaxed. You might start to feel tingling on your skin. That's the alpha state. There's a whole lot of things, you know. It's all before. I'll list like paragraphs, but I'll list a few right now. And in theta, you start to get visual imagery and specks of light, different colors. The deeper the theta, the stronger the imagery. And that's when things start to get interesting. So when you get into deep theta and light delta, delta is the state of deepest sleep, or coma even. Somebody's in a coma there in deep delta. And like you said, that's why everybody has an out-of-body experience. Whenever you go into delta, you have an out-of-body experience. It's just that what happens is most people, they're not sufficiently trained or developed to be able to bring their awareness at that depth, as you were saying. So I call it the awareness threshold. So most people, their awareness threshold is around alpha, sometimes not even alpha. And what I've observed through my research of teaching people, and I stopped and started several times. That's another reason why my technical modality is so sharpened, because, you know, I would start practicing at teenage years and I would get good. And let's say I want to explore something. And a lot of these experiences were pockets of practice. Like I decided I want to go meet some dead people. So
right,
I went out
right.
and I met Ralph Monroe, and I went out and met my grandmother. One of my times when I saw Ralph Monroe, I met one of his students. I don't remember his name right now. And then I would stop practicing again.
Wait, did you just say you met Marilyn Monroe? Is that what you just said?
No, Robert Monroe. Robert Monroe.
Oh, Robert he's an Monroe. Out-of-body, you mean from the Monroe
Robert
Institute?
Yeah.
Ah,
I mean, that's not true. Yeah.
Okay.
So
you know
this is what happened.
You know who I met?
Again?
Know who
Ooh.
I met? Bill Thetford.
Who?
Bill Thetford.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Interesting.
He's a sweetheart. He did
after
something
he died?
With my heart. Yeah, after he died. He he did something with my heart, and when I checked in to find out what the experience was about, he said that he noticed a little bit of hardness still, even though I've been studying. He noticed a little bit of hardness and wanted to help me and put his hand on my heart to try to help me. He's a sweetheart. Yeah.
Oh, yes. I remember Kenneth Wapner talking about him saying, I guess I can't remember specifically if he said he was enlightened or he was close, but I know he said he was very progressed. If he's still around, then that means he can't be enlightened, because if you're enlightened, then you're not around at all anymore. So he must have just been very, very progressed. But I remember Kenneth Wapner saying he was very progressed. That's pretty awesome.
Well, anyway, let's get into some of your stories. I know people are fascinated to hear about the methodology, but I think a lot of people are going to want to hear some more good nuggets of experience and fascinating stuff. Did you want to talk about other experiences that you had and more progressive? Because
you
can also speak knowledgeably about extraterrestrials, and I do have a number of listeners that want to learn more about that. Would you like to share who you met and what transpired?
Certainly. One of my main ET encounters was this being named Okinos, and he was actually a father of mine from a different lifetime. You know, as my bio says, pretty much any psychic power you can name, I dabbled in and experimented with it, and I started to do channeling. And so I read a lot of other stuff that's not OB related, so I didn't necessarily include them all in the bibliography or travel far, but read a lot of channeling like Seth with Jane Roberts and what she did and learned, and I started to apply that with the automatic writing, and I met several different beings, and eventually I got to this being called Okinos, who was this 6 or 7 foot tall gray alien being, and his planet, our old planet, was actually destroyed apparently in a war. He took me there one time, and he was like just a floating cinder. I had several experiences with him. He took me to this plane called the Guide Plane. Apparently, there's this area of the non-physical where people who have the job or accept the job as a spirit guide to kind of congregate. It's like when you do anything else, you know. You have doctors, medical doctors, and they usually eat in their little lounge, and then the nurses eat there, or teachers have their lounge, and the students eat in the cafeteria, something like that. It's not anything special or anything necessarily, just the way it always is. So the guide has their plane, and it's made of golden light. And I was like, wow, that's interesting. I was like, well, how do the guys know that someone is once a guy? And he said that on this level, thought is physical. And he directed my attention to a different area. And the ground, which was made of golden light, rose up in a conical shape. And he said, that's the intention of someone looking for a guide. And one of the non-physical guide beings walked over to the cone and touched it. As soon as he touched it, there was a brilliant flash of light, and the guide was gone. Apparently, he went to the person, and he said that person made contact with a being. So I had several contacts with him. So, he actually saved my life a few times. Go ahead.
So this is a plane, shall we say, where spirit guides kind of reside. And then when a human being is in need of guidance, their prayer or that thought form travels to this cone. There's a flash of light, and then that guide knows to go and attempt to help. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right. So in a sense, we're always multidimensional beings. And, you know, we have a thought. We were talking about brainwaves earlier. That manifests physically in the change of our brainwave frequencies. And we have a corresponding non-physical component, our non-physical body. There's a response. And there's also a response at this thought level. And they actually perceive that response like a physical object. And they can touch it and interact with it. And, you know, and I imagine, you know, there's probably different levels of guides. You know, I imagine there's probably the highest level of guides or one of the highest ones thinking about it because, you know, I've met guys that are not that advanced. So let me just make sure I throw that out there. Don't think every time you meet a guy, they come from that plane. I just want to make sure I throw that out there. But
yeah,
mine are
always around me and they don't shut up. So they must have been this plane you went to had to be a little higher to receive a special request, you know. Sounds like that was a special circumstance that someone with advanced knowledge might have had to go and address. I don't know. I'm just guessing. But it's still an interesting concept.
Yeah, very much. I just went there one time. He was just kind of showing me around. He showed me around a few places. Like when I went and saw Robin Monroe, I met him at what he called the park, and there's a university there, and there's and you can see the Akashic Records building across this big lawn. And I was kind of curious about going there, and Okanos took me there one time. So he was kind of like sightseeing me around a few places. So, you know, I didn't go back there a lot. But, that's one of the many things. And again,
you didn't go back?
Yeah, I didn't go back. I don't really need to.
I have something to share. I had a I don't know if we had a chance to get to this type of information when we were just getting acquainted on the phone. But I specialize in dream interpretation, and many years ago, probably close to 20 years ago now, one of my dreamers, I was on the phone with my dreamer, and she was telling me about this dream, and I started giggling as I'm taking the notes, and she's like, "What's so funny?" I said, I'll explain it to you in a minute, just keep going. She's like, "Yeah, so now I'm flying, and I fly up to this big white building, and it's got the columns, and it's got this." And then I knocked on the door. I said, "What?" And then a little man with white hair stuck his head out the door and said, "What do you want?" And she was like, "How do you know that?" I said, "I know him. Just keep going." So she went on with the story, but she wasn't aware. She wasn't dreaming. That was an astral travel experience. So I explained to her about the Akashic Records and how crabby the keeper is, and that he's that way to everybody. He doesn't care how nice you are, but he's going to say, "What do you want?" But what she wanted, she had just had a baby, and her husband's father died at a young age in a tragic accident, and she was feeling sad in her heart that her son would never know his grandfather and vice versa. So when the crabby guy says, "What do you want?" She said, "Well, I'm looking for my father-in-law." And he was like, "What?" She says, "I'm looking for my father-in-law. I wanted him to meet my son." And he says, "Wait a minute." And he slams the door in her face, opens it back up, and says, "Come in." So he takes her through a large room and then makes her sit in a courtroom, which I thought was interesting. But she sat in a courtroom that was empty, no judge, no jury, no spectators. And after a little while, she waited a while, but in comes the father-in-law. And she had never met him because he had died so young. But she introduced herself and let him know that she had had a son. And he thanked her for letting him know. And there was a beautiful ending to it. But it was just so cute how she thought she was dreaming. And I'm like, no, that was a totally different experience. Isn't that funny, though? that what she explained was that the guy was confused why she would ask about meeting someone who was deceased instead of asking to read a section of her book. That's what made him confused. So he figured it out and went and summoned the guy, I guess. But good.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, that's pretty common. I mean, you know, dreams, what we call dreams, I mean, an actual dream is really a hallucination that we're projecting. And because we're projecting it subconsciously or unconsciously, that's why it lends itself to dream interpretation like you're doing, because it's our projection. You know, ironically, just like the physical world, that's, you know, getting into the Course in Miracles. But some things we remember as dreams, they're really just dreams. And there's also the out-of-body experiences that you're not fully conscious in, that you
think feels like a dream,
just like that person.
Yeah.
That's right, because your conscience is so unclear. And several times I've seen people out of body. Most of the time, we just float right close to our physical body,
mm-hmm.
but periodically. Regularly, but not all the time. You know, people wander about, or they go to sleepers classes. Like I saw people at that university when I saw Robin Monroe that don't remember in their physical body at the out of body. And but if they remember anything at all, they'll probably remember it as a dream. Sometimes these people are conscious. Like I've tried to alert people, hey, you're out of body, and they're like they're drunk or in a stupor, and you can't wake them up at all.
Yeah,
and some of these people
no energy.
Speak to you. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's like they're, you know, like they're on some kind of a downer
not
or something.
Clear.
You know?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. But some of these people are clear. Some of these people, you could talk to them and have a conversation as if, like me and you are talking, and you could
mm-hmm.
learn things about them. But when you call them up the next day, they have no memory of it at all. So that's why it's important. That's why it's necessary, I could say, that you have to practice. Because over the years, when I would stop and start, and every time I would refine the techniques and gain better understanding, that's what I found out. You know, it's just, you know, it happens all the time. It's just that, just like with anything else, I mean, I can give you a basketball, and you can throw it. Anybody can throw a basketball if they have working arms, but that doesn't mean that you can go play in the NBA.
Right.
So, you know, everybody
that would take
a
lot of practice.
Part of our physiology. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Take some fresh same thing with out of body experience. It's a natural part of our physiology. But even with me, and a lot of people, you know, I get the sort of, you know, some people think they can't do it because they try with other less, you know, because I had several people in my study who they'd been trying for years and they just couldn't do it because they were practicing with substandard methods, and they thought, I just can't do it.
Right.
And you did it. You were doing it naturally. That's why it's working for you. And I said, no, it's just that, you know, everybody has to develop that what I call flexibility of consciousness to be able to push that up threshold back to bring that consciousness through. So anybody can do it. It just takes practice. And I know that, again, because when I start practicing for a year or two, I have to start fresh just like everybody else.
Absolutely.
You know, but you know, during that period of time, I learned again, and I might do it a different way and on another aspect. But, you know, just because I started spontaneously doesn't mean it's just always. Even now, I have to start practicing again. Like, I've had three last month I had three OBEs. This month, my goal is six, and I just keep on increasing it. I want to do some more outer space explorations.
Okay.
You know, you're talking about OBEs and ETs. I can actually share with you an OBE where an interesting mix up between ETs and OBEs, if you'd like to hear. So, what happened is I started practicing casually last year. I guess it wasn't really casual at the time. I said I was doing that second research study, which we haven't gotten into yet. And but I was going out about it to meet some other people and stuff like that, and we was confirming it. And I was doing some ET contacts as well because I was leading. I led a retreat. I had a retreat coming up, a CE5 contact retreat, and I started making contact. And I went out of body spontaneously. I was still warming up, semi-conscious,
mm-hmm.
and I was focusing on having contact. And I was standing in front of this craft. I'm out of body. I know I'm out of body. And I saw somebody that I know who periodically see out of body, but he never remembers it. And there was another group of people there. And there was this spherical craft right there by the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been telling my friends, I was like, look, I'm starting to make contact again. And if I get on the craft, I'm going to try to get on the craft and not come back. They're going to have to kick me off. So like, but what I'll do is, so y'all know what's going on, I'll do a flyby. You know, you know, we could do a flyby. I'll do a flyby so you can see the craft. and then I'll be on my way off to another solar system or wherever, at least another planet that's not so insane, right? And so I saw this craft, and I actually had a little bit of trepidation. I was like, you know, do I want to go? And I still have some books I'm planning to write. I'm not sure. I was like, okay, let me get on the thing. And they let me on the craft, and the beings looked, I don't know if I just wasn't fully clear. I couldn't, you know what it reminded me of? If you saw that movie Contact,
sure,
with Jodie Foster, and
love
she
it.
Was on the beach, and I love that movie too, I saw that several times, and she saw this hazy figure walking up, and eventually it became her father.
Right.
That hazy figure, it looked like that. It was more, it wasn't fully formed as a being. It was like in the middle. You could see a humanoid being there, but it was still sort of hazy, like I couldn't really see it clearly. And it was a bluish type being. And I got on the craft, and it took me to the solar system. We went up into the air. I was able to see some of the planets in the solar system as we flew by, and they brought me back. And I woke up the next day, and everything was fine. I was like, cool, you know, another cool experience. And my friend called me up the next day. He was like, D, I didn't think you were going to answer. I was like, well, what do you mean? He was like, I thought you was coming to tell me you was leaving. I was like, what do you mean? He was like, I saw this craft outside, and I thought that was you. And I was like, well, what did the craft look like? And he said it looked like a sphere. So he told me, like, that's awesome, because I just got on a spherical craft last night thinking I'm going to do a flyby. So the craft that I got on out of body, they actually took that craft and did a flyby to my friend. He has a horrible cell phone video of it, but you can still see this sphere in the distance. He was at work at the time. We were in different time zones. And you could see this sphere floating in the distance in the background and match the description of the craft I was on. So I thought that was a very, very interesting confirmation of several things. It confirmed the out-of-body experience. It confirmed the ETs. It confirmed the contact. In several different ways, that was an awesome experience.
That's one of the things I like about your book is that you do offer confirmation. Like, you know, maybe it was a one-time thing, but if I can reproduce it, or as in the case with your friend, his name was what, Lewis?
That's right.
Is that Lewis? Okay. And then
he
actually saw you, and you're saying he caught it on, it might not be good quality, but he caught something on his cell phone?
That's right. He got a video of it on his cell phone outside of his work window, this little sphere floating in the background. I can find it on my computer. I'll send it to you. So you can check and look at it.
I
thought
like
that was pretty cool, you know. And I mean, even without the video, because I didn't tell him I was on a spherical craft. I didn't really think much about it. He told me, you know, it was a spherical craft. So I mean, what's the odds of me getting on a spherical craft after planning to do a flyby and him seeing the same craft or a craft that was a sphere the same night or the next day or whatever the time frame was. And it was pretty cool, you know. And talking about confirmation, that's not all the confirmation. I mean, I did a research study. Like I said, I'm a scientist. And I guess once you have enough experience, you don't have to be afraid of testing the experience. I know a lot of people, there's the fear of failure. You know, I have people tell me that I don't want to practice because I don't want to fail. Well, you know, we did this experience where I have him and I have my other friend, Manuel, and we decided to – I made this research study where I was like, let's go out of body and meet and confirm it.
Right.
And you know, I had the research study in 2012 where I was teaching people, okay, I confirmed the techniques, I confirmed the methodology, I confirmed people could learn it, and that became the techniques in travel for. Because I was like, okay, well, let's confirm the experience some more, and let's get out of body and meet. And this is the most, I guess two of the most telling experiences. I learned a lot of what I know from Lewis. He's a master. He's more of a reclusive type, really. So I don't know if he's going to publish a book. He said it's all in my book, so he's going to have to write one now, but he's really cool. And he went out of body, and he met Explorer 3, and he went into his room. And the first thing he noticed was there was a sound of flashiness in the room, like somebody had gas. And you saw my friend up in there, and my friend is the researcher 3. He's very experienced as well. He sensed him come into the room. Like I said, when you practice this stuff, you can sense a non-physical person come into the room. And let me back up one moment. The format I made for the research study is this. Like on the nextdensity.com site, there's a forum, and you know, that's where pretty much all the classes and research studies and everything, the communication happens. And I said, well, look, everybody has their own thread. It's like, well, when you have an experience that you think is a success, write your journal entry or post your journal on your thread and do not read anybody else's thread until after you post your journal. right?
Right.
So it's not like we're having the experience and then we talk about it and then we write about it. You have the experience, you totally journal it, and then after you journal it, until that time, you don't talk about it or read anybody else's account. So he saw Researcher 3. He heard this fashionate sound. He recognized that Researcher 3 noticed him. But Researcher 3 was apparently busy doing things. So he acknowledged his presence telepathically, and he put up a shield. Like, you know those shield, those metaphysical bubbles that we put up?
Yes.
And when he put up the bubble, Lewis was pushed back out the room, and suddenly Researcher 3 became invisible, and he couldn't see him anymore, and he went about his business. And another experience, he went and found Researcher 3. He noticed that he was walking in some kind of strip mall type area, and thought it was interesting. And he again recognized that Researcher 3 noticed his presence, and he went and did his business. He noticed he described what one of the most prominent buildings looked like. I don't remember his exact description, but let's say it was a white building with bricks or whatever.
Okay.
So they went back and they posted their journals. And when you read Manuel's journal, this is what it says. He's like, I'm sitting in my room, I'm watching this video, and I sense Lewis, Researcher 2, coming to the room. I acknowledged his presence, but I was really busy. I wanted to do my thing, and his energy was so strong that it was interfering with what I was doing, so I put up this shield to kind of try to tone it down, and then he went away. And then the other experience, he was like, I sense Lewis's presence, he didn't even think about the environment. And now, after they post the experience, of course, now they can go read each other's journals. So when Researcher 3, Manuel, went and read Researcher 2, Lewis's journal, he was like, wow, I know what you heard when you heard the fashionist song. Because at that period of time, he happened to be watching this funny video online, and the dude was making, like, fashionist sounds on his arm or whatever. And that's what he heard. Oh, and another detail. Lewis heard somebody saying, trying to borrow money. Like he thought it was Manuel, because some things you don't get so clear. But he knew that somebody was trying to borrow money from somebody or something like that. And it so happened after Researcher 3 read that, he was like, I knew what was going on. My parents was in the other room talking about borrowing money from each other. Like so many things were confirmed. And then on the second experience, Researcher 3 happened to be going to a strip mall at the time, and one of the most prominent buildings, Master Description. And that's just one of the confirmations. We had like 8 different confirmations doing that research study. A very good telepathic research. We were doing telepathy as well. Me and Lewis were sitting and he reached our ultra state, and he sent me a telepathic message. And we didn't even do the thing where you send like a card where it's like a square or a triangle or whatever. We just said just send anything in the whole wide all existence, and we'll try to pick it up. So we were sitting in meditation, and what I got was a hot dog. I saw a 3-dimensional picture of a hot dog floating in my third eye, and I cleared it out in my mind, and I opened up my mind again to see if anything else comes, and that's exactly what he was sending. He said that what he was doing was he was imagining eating a hot dog at like a sports event. He was just trying to imagine what to him was the most emotionally driven experience of eating a hot dog, which was, you know, he likes going to football events, and that's like the best hot dog to him. So
the
he was sitting there imagining eating
the
hot dog. Yeah, all that stuff.
The experience of eating the hot dog, the sights, sounds, and smells. Yeah, that's a good visualization.
I got it perfectly. Perfectly. So we had several different validations about it by the experience of telepathy to validate not only that the techniques work, but that the experience is real. And, you know, science is just so far behind. So, you know, what we call science, you know, is just so far behind, largely because it's corporate controlled and all kind of craziness is going on, and it's status controlled. And I don't want to say that because what my fellow scientists are going to think. But it's so ironic how unscientific modern-day science is, you know. But, you know, I have no doubt that, and that's one reason why I do these experiments as well. I'm going to do more research studies as well. Each one gets more progressed. Like, I don't know if I'll ever do another teaching research study, because that's a lot of work. You know, I take it really seriously when I teach someone and I read their journals and advise them on exactly what to do. And that's one reason why they can do it in 2 months, because I notice a lot of people have a lot of misunderstandings, you know, about
right.
the way it works. A lot to do with a lot of dogma that's out there. Like, you know, one of the things that people taught, you know, like I said, I start and stop. And every time I had to read them again, and it helped me to sharpen the technical modality. And, you know, people say that you can't move. I found that you can move. You know, if you're trying to practice to get out of body, and like you were saying, you wanted to touch on to some of the things that people can do before practice, and this is a good place to touch on that now.
Yeah,
you can move. If your nose itches, you can scratch your nose. You know, and I had people, you know, basically stressing themselves out thinking I can't move, and they're like, nose is itching. What's the best way to make an itch more?
It's stress out.
Decide not to scratch.
Just
yeah,
stress,
you know what I'm saying?
To...
No. You know, I would say if as far as eating things, I would say be, you know, on a partially full stomach, and I don't know if that's a proper way to say it. Mostly empty stomach. Like you know, I find if I'm hungry, my stomach can. You know,
it's
going to
send signals to the brain and interrupt what you're trying to do. Yeah, you don't want to be hungry, but you don't want to be full and heavy either.
Exactly.
You just want something light, like maybe broth or something like that. Avoid alcohol.
Right.
And I would, you know, we've all had experiences. You eat something spicy or this weird mix of food and beverage, and then you have these weird dreams. You don't want that. I always recommend,
right.
you know, a pretty steady routine of meditation. But like you said earlier, it takes practice and it takes patience. But the most important thing I found, because I've been practicing this consciously from the age of 12, and I worked almost, Daryl, almost daily on this. There was probably only a span of 3 or 4 days in between attempts that went by where I didn't. And it wasn't until I was 30 that I was able to stand up, you know, just sit up, get out of bed and step out. Of my body.
Awesome.
And I'll tell you about that, but I tried so hard and that's where I was going wrong. I was good at the energy,
the itch
but
thing.
What's that?
With the itch thing or you mean with the food thing?
I'm sorry, what?
What were you going wrong with? The itch or with
no,
the food?
I was,
or how much
no, I wasn't talking about food anymore. I was saying that I would try to consciously will myself out of my body and I was trying so hard that I was stressing myself out. And that when
oh,
I got
saying,
up,
I see.
Yeah,
just
and then
you were
I was
trying so hard. I got you.
No, I was just trying so hard to. The only book I had was Astral Projection by Denning and Phillips. You do have an extensive bibliography in this. There's a lot
yeah,
of books.
I read
books. That. And that was the only one I had, so that was all I had to go on. And I just didn't. I don't recall them ever saying, you know, oh, but make sure you're relaxed. And I read through your list. I was like, look at all these books. Oh, I think I had Flying Without a Broom, too. But as I read through your list, I was like, oh, my God, have I got some catching up to do. And
what
on a funny note.
What is the thing about it? You don't have to do the catching up. Travel Far caught it up for you. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So, like, if you know, if one of the problems I had when I first started practicing consciously was, like, the only book I had, one of the ones in the bibliography is, at least one of the first books I got was The Practice of Magic, which is still a good book. It's an awesome book. But it had one chapter on out-of-body experiences. And it taught just relaxing. And
right.
But when I started to relax, crazy things started to happen.
Really?
He didn't say nothing
really?
About vibrations. And I was like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah,
I just
the
stopped.
Buzzing
like, I don't remember anything like this.
Yeah.
What is it? Yeah, exactly.
And the buzzing
so,
sound
you know,
and all this neat stuff happens as you're exiting. And and we have to mention paralysis. I don't see you mentioning it this way, but we call it a bad landing when you come back and you're paralyzed and you can't move and you're in bed. All you can move is your eyelids, and because
all
your spirit is half in and half out of your body. What?
Exactly. But when you don't know about that stuff and it happens, I mean, this guy just says you just relax and you sit out. What's this?
Yeah.
You know, it's like what the hell is going on? So that's why, and I stopped for a while because I'm like. Am I breaking something? I don't know what's going on. So, but I touch on all of that. But I found that every time, every single book I read, they mentioned this, but they didn't mention that. Or they mentioned some kind of dogma. So, you know, that's why there's a section where I list all the different things you could experience. You know, you have it right there. Turn to chapter Developmental Basics, chapter 8.
Chapter 8.
I'm sorry. Go to chapter 7, the theory, basic theory. I'm sorry. and go to the part that says the progression marker list. And that's why I list all that stuff in detail.
That's where my bookmarker is. Okay, and you're talking about the altered states, of course.
Exactly. Progression marker list where it says beta, alpha, theta. That's what I was saying. You know, in the interview, it'll probably take an hour to literally talk about every one. But you can see there's like dozens and dozens of lists because one thing I found was every time I practiced again, I experienced something different. What I found is that there's a few signature phenomena that people will almost always experience. And of course, as you start to develop, different things you may not experience as well. But I found an entire plethora of things you could experience on the way going out of body, some you know, subtle and some quite profound. I remember one time I had an experience where it was like butterflies were swimming through my body. You know, it was like, and it could have been a frightening experience if I wasn't prepared for things like that, but it was quite interesting. So, you know, but there's certain things that can happen along the way that if you're not prepared for, it could really freak you out.
And, you know, the Denning and Phillips book, and on a funny note, I have to say, I only had one book, and you read all of these, and as I'm reading through the list, I'm just thinking, my Lord, how did he have all the money for all this fancy book learning? And I'm doing things, I did things the hard way all that time. Anyway, what was I going to say? I don't remember now. But
I mean, you know, but the fact is, a lot of these techniques work. Like I got out of body with the Denning and Phillips technique. I mean, the main technique they have is you emit that tube of energy into the air, and then you take the tube of energy and you make it into a sort of
body.
Amorphous thing, and then you make it into a body. I got out of body that way. I mean, I only got out of that body that way just to test it out, but I haven't found that to be the best method. But I mean, it's not to say that you can't get these books and succeed. You can get these books and succeed because I believe. Only one or two, you know, have I run into that I doubt, all right, they actually really succeeded. I just throw it out there. The majority of the ones out there, I believe they succeeded with the message. I just think that their methodology, as you found, is lacking a bit or is very one-sided. Like, for instance, Molina and Denning, you know, the Dennings, they've sort of more like witchcraft, Wicca, nothing wrong with that, but it's just it's very dogmatic, you know, the way the perspective is. It's a very narrow perspective. So, but whatever you have, I think it'll work. I think that's one of the reasons why it took so long as well, because you know, in my experience, when I teach people, if they apply what I teach them 2 months, they get out on average, about 2 months. They don't know how they apply themselves, give or take. Like everybody will apply themselves in the study. At the least, they got to the theta state, which is right there. I ended it at 2 months. Like I said, it's a lot of work. But you know, one person. Let me see. Actually, inside the appendix, I list the specifics. Let me see what it has here. Overall, there were 5 out-of-body experiences reported. 4 were partial, like a limb or an arm jutting out. If you want to follow along, just go to the appendix. It's like the first thing.
I'm with you.
One brief out-of-body experience, including a perception of a non-physical entity. I think a lot of the time difference because, again, I mean, I had the same experience. It took years of experimentation. But, you know, I was really on a mission. You know, at the time, I really thought, let me go back. When I was a kid, the very first metaphysical book I bought, I was about, I don't know, like 6 or 7 years old, actually. You're talking about the money. I spent a lot of money on books.
I didn't have it.
But the first book I bought, it was because my mom and dad used to give me a few little dollars. And I saved up the money and ordered a book in the mail. It was a book on concentration. But even from a little kid, I was interested in the purpose and meaning of life. And I think that's why I was so driven, because I thought that the out-of-body experience was the answer to that. You know, I thought it was going to lead me out of the cycle of birth and death. And the highest echelon, I could say, of the out-of-body experience, I thought they'd be what I call ascension, where you can get to the point of dematerializing your physical body and taking it to different dimensions directly. And I've had some experiences we can talk about that lets me know that that's possible. But along the way, I started to get into other, and eventually I got into A Course in Miracles. And, you know, that's really where you really want to be if you really want true spiritual development. But that's why I was so driven. I was really driven because I thought this was going to be the you know, I wanted to be free. I had some sense of understanding that there was something more than this life, that there was from spiritual development and spiritual growth. And I think that's why I was so driven to spend all that money and all that time to do all that stuff, you know. But then
the Miracles comes along and it changes everything. And
that's right.
And then you can use them in tandem. I did. I've shared experiences with a couple people, but one time I went to find Alan. You know, I call it my homework. I was in a dream. I figured out the dream. I got done, and I said, okay, I'm done my homework. When I'm lucid, and let me go find Alan. And I thought I would do, like, a drive-by, go find him wherever he was in the dream state and pick him up and say, come flying with me, and I want to show you a couple things. But when I found him, he was not clear, and I called his name, and he turned around, and when he looked at me, he was terrified. He was like, what are you doing here? And I was like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to scare you. And he was like, I have to go. He was in the middle of a dream, I think. But I was like, I never did that again. I don't want to scare the guy. But, you know, a couple people I've met up with, and a friend did tell me what I look like after she hadn't even met me yet, and she told me what I look like. But we have about 10 minutes left, Daryl. Is there anything that we're forgetting to mention or anything you wanted to mention?
Well, sure. I want to let everybody know, like, if you do want to take the 2-month course, there is a 20% off discount going on. You could just at checkout use the code 20OFF, 20 capital OFF. So that way, if anybody did want to take the course, now is a good time because actually I have a student that's going starting now from June through July. Because I had one planned for August. He was like, I want to get started. And he's been trying for like 4 months without success with other methods. I was like, well, come on, let me I'll help you through this thing. And so you can sign up now, and we could actually start immediately this Saturday, or you can start in August as well. So it lasts 2 months. And, our reader journals, I'll teach you everything to guide you along faster. I would also want people to know that it's very I don't want to underestimate it or overestimate it. You know, it's not spirituality. That's a common misunderstanding. So learning out of body experience in itself is not going to help you with your self-hatred. Or, you could apply it in the sense to learn the meaning of life, but, the thing about out of body experience, it's still within the realm of perception, it's still within the universe. You know, it's a common misunderstanding that that consciousness is outside the ego. That's not the case. You could even say that consciousness is the ego. If you look into the course, it says the first split introduced into the mind after the separation was consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
That is
absolutely
the first
absolutely
level of
that's what it says.
So, you know, and our individual consciousness is simply a reflection of that universal consciousness. So you're not getting outside of the dream, but just by going out of body. So I just want to make sure I state that, you know. But at the
point.
Same time, it is a very, mm-hmm. very powerful experience. You know, I've explored alternate lifetimes. I've explored alternate timelines. I've explored outer space. I went about 200 or 400 light years away. I plan on going forward. I'm going to start exploring other galaxies soon.
You had to fight a few things, too. I mean, I've had some negative experiences. I've never gotten into an actual fist fight. But, I had to fend off a few very negative things. It was pretty frightening. Yeah, I was scared for a minute, and then I said to myself, you know, I know for a fact I have 6 spirit guides standing behind me, so you don't scare me. And they slowly backed away, and they left it at that. Yeah, so that worked out.
And it's good to mention as well. I mean, just like with the physical world, how there's negative people walking around, I mean, you know.
As above, so below. It's the way
it works. Exactly. So, you know, it's not even really as above, so below. It's just, it really is all just the same. It's just a different frequency of the same thing, you know. So you'll find negative beings, and you'll find, but I would say what's most constructive about the non-physical realms that I found is that it's more strategically placed. Like, you know, here you could go to the left and see a positive being, and you can go to the right and see a negative being.
Right. Well,
but
that's what that means. What as above, so below means is the same energies that are present, because we see ourselves as this is life, and we look at heaven as the afterlife. But there are negative people here, there are positive people here, everywhere in between. And likewise, there the same things exist up there, and some people have a common misperception that once you die, you turn into an angel, and that's not the case.
That's right.
There are varying degrees of energy, so it matches the varying degrees of energy on this dense level. So the potential is there for both positive and negative experiences. That's what I meant by as above, so below.
That's right. That's right.
Does
except
that make
it's
sense?
More strategically placed, like a lot of the negative entities, if you fly up, you could escape them and they can't follow you. We visited them when I got tired of fighting them. I just would fly up, and I noticed that there was a certain frequency they couldn't go beyond. So you know,
yeah,
but I mean, you know,
yeah.
some of them called it the terror, the threshold. You know, some of the things are projections of our own mind, but it could also be astral, non-physical entities, and you can apply to develop spiritually by what you perceive, by the expanded perception. Like I said, when I went through that source being, I learned that you can love unconditionally and accept unconditionally. It doesn't really matter what anyone does or doesn't. There's a different order of thought available to us, irrespective of what happens on the level of the world, irrespective of what anyone does or does not do. So it
right.
can be applied to develop your spirituality. But again, that's no different than anything else. You know, you could really do anything on how you think about it
yeah.
to help you spiritually. So I would say if you want to learn how to have out-of-body experiences, you don't have to read a few hundred books like I did. You can get travel far, and you'll see it's condensed. And even through a lot of the book that you probably read, I even refer to the other books and collate some things. And you know, I'm sure it'll help you. And I just want to throw this out as well. You know, you don't have to take the course to learn. Everything is in the book. It's not like you have to take the course to get secret information. I mean, I try to things to you specifically, but everything you need is in Tribal Far. It's only like $14 or $15. So, you know,
yeah.
and you will have everything you need if you just apply yourself.
So
if you do want to have spiritual attitude,
yeah.
exactly, you know, so everything is there. And if you want spiritual attitude, you get classes on the
yeah.
Course in Miracles. Which is
yeah, nice. Totally. You know, stick with the course. But you have everything in here from psychic development. You've got pictures. You go through mudras, which is a yogic postures for the hands, ladies and gentlemen. And then you go into checklists, graphs, and charts. This is very detailed. And
awesome.
Then you
awesome.
Have detachment techniques, like you say, state acquisition. And then you have charts with all different types of where to go from here. You know, start here, then go here, then go here. And it's very specific. I wish I had known you 30 years ago.
Yeah,
would have had a lot
time.
Of fun. Yes, so
yeah.
swing by and pick me up sometime. We'll go flying.
Awesome. Yeah, you sound like you have some good experiences. You're out there meeting people and awesome. That's really good. I didn't know you had as much experience in your belt. That's pretty cool.
I
really think that pretty soon is going to be common, huh?
I've had some doozies. My favorite of all, you know, the first one was the funniest. First conscious one. When I was a kid, I was aware that I was flying. And one of the first times that I brought back that memory, sometime later after, you know, I came back to my body, I saw something on TV, and what I saw was what I was flying over in the out-of-body, and that was the Everglades.
Interesting.
So I thought, I was there, but I went there, you know, so that's what gave me a clue that that was possible. And then I started working with dreams at 4.5 after my dreams went from black and white to color. And then once you achieve a certain level of lucidity, then you can say, well, I think I'm at a point where I can fly now. And then I worked with that for quite a number of years. And then at 12, I found out you can do it consciously. So that's when I started doing that. So I had a number of experiences, and much like yours, some pretty normal.
Right, very parallel.
You know, you're
yeah.
traveling
the
around your neighborhood.
Like
yeah, good stuff like that. But when I was 30, I had experienced a tragedy when I was 25. Someone very close to me was killed in a car accident. And it put me really in the depths of depression. And I practiced, I guess I still practice as often as I used to because that's just what I did. But when I was 30, what I did was, you might have this in your book, I don't know. But what I did was I identified my power hour. And what that means is every hour of the day has different energy, and I was aware of this, so I wanted to figure out which one of those hours was the best to do my metaphysical work, and I would make a list from like 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, all the way through the day. But I recognize that at 11 a.m. and 11 p.m., I get an energy surge. So I decided to take my power hour and have that be devoted to my metaphysical work. So if it was on a weekend, I can work with 11 a.m., if it was during the week, I knew to put myself into bed and be asleep by at least 10 o'clock so that when that energy surge took place, that I would be primed. Otherwise, if I was awake at 11 o'clock, I'm going to get the energy surge, and then I can't get to sleep and do this stuff. But what happened was I was 30, and 11 o'clock came along, and I was like, oh, let me go lie down and see what I can do. But the major component that was different here, I was relaxed. I wasn't trying so hard. And I did it, and I sat up, and I threw my legs over the side of the bed, and I stood straight up, and I stood in front of my the doors to my closet were mirrored, and I looked, and there I was, and I could see me and yet see through me and all that great, all the details. And I was like, oh, my God. So I'm looking at my hands. I'm like, I did it. I finally did it. And
awesome.
And as I looked in the mirror, I noticed someone else sitting on the bed. And the person sitting on the bed was the person who had died, who he was my boyfriend. And he was bit of a tough ticket, but he was so funny. And I missed him terribly. And I looked, and I see him, and I was like, oh, my God. I said, Joey? And he's smiling. And he looks at me, and you want to hear his response?
What did he say?
I said, Joey? And he says, yeah, what are you doing, asshole?
Oh, my God.
I said, don't you move, don't you move. And here's what I did. I put my hands on the mirror. And I spun my hips around so that I was halfway facing him because I didn't want to take the time to turn around and have him disappear. I wanted to talk to him. So I'm doing this comical thing where I had my hands on the mirror, twist my feet around, and then I spun around real fast. And then I just went and I sat near him. I had this fear, I guess, from Denning and Phillips that if you get too close to your body, you'll snap back in. But that didn't happen, actually. That wasn't the case, and not on this day. And I just sat with him and talked with him and played with his hair and had a great time. And that just started, realization, okay, you graduated to that level, now keep going. And then, there's been other experiences where I, after my mom died, and I went and found her and made sure she was okay. And that worked out really well. So they're beautiful experiences. Yeah.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah. I've been playing for quite a while with this. But you did all this research. You did a beautiful job.
Awesome. And let me give them that, though. Like with Denning and Phillips, that can happen depending on your often with a beginner, you can get pulled back in because your level of consciousness is not sharp enough and aware enough where you can get pulled back. And I'll give them that. That does happen a lot with beginners. But as you found, it's not the rule because obviously your awareness was clear enough. I mean, you're fully conscious. You are fully aware. You're aware of your non-physical self. You're aware of your environment. So your level of clarity was enough to where you didn't have to worry about that. But I found with teaching people that, the average person, the first few times they get out, they won't be able to get far. They'll get sucked right back in, and that does happen for the first few times. But it's not a rule like they might say. But, yes, I can see, other words, I can see how they can believe that's the rule because it does happen in a lot of cases. But
yeah. Well, I really appreciate that you took the time to put all this stuff together, all the research that you did, writing this book, doing your courses, building your center and your desire to share this and actually teach people, because that's got to be labor intensive. It depends on everybody's different, and it depends on so much, and it sounds like a lot of work. And I don't know that I could do it, Daryl. I don't know that I could get that specific and say, okay, let's learn astral projection or let's learn remote viewing. I'll teach you how to do that. I don't know that I have the time to invest in that. So I appreciate that you did. And I want everybody to get this book. It's called Travel Far, A Beginner's Guide to the Out-of-Body Experience, including first-hand accounts, which are terrific, and comprehensive theory and methods. He gives you methods to experiment with to see if you can achieve out-of-body. If you want to start small, as Daryl and I spoke about, the dream state is a good way. And I caution, as long as your homework is done, work on that lucidity. Put that tablet by the bed. Set your intention before you go to bed that you will be lucid, you will remember your dreams, and then as you build that lucidity, then you can build that conscious awareness that you are dreaming, and then you can make that decision, and Daryl, you can rephrase it, like, okay, I think I'll go flying, or I want to go visit this person. Is there something you do when you, if you're sleeping when it happens, is there something you say to yourself to say, okay, I'm going flying now, or what do you declare to yourself?
I just that's a viewable method. Several people use the affirmations, I guess you can say. I don't usually declare anything. I usually just you know, I guess one of the things I tried to do was get it to the bare core of the experience. And I found it's not really necessary to affirm you can. I just take stock of myself, kind of like how when you're daydreaming, like say you're getting in an elevator and you're going up and you're daydreaming, and then the bell goes ding and you're like, oh, and you catch yourself and you're focused again. That's all I do. I just look at myself and just take hold of myself and just make it go. So I'm gonna say it's necessary to affirm, but you can find benefit with that. You know, William Bowman and Lewis, he got it from William Bowman, finds benefit with screaming, clarity now, lucidity now. But I've actually, myself, I haven't found I needed to do that. I think it has a lot to do with the habits you form and what becomes normal for you. Because over the years, I found that, like if I practice with a certain technique, you get better with that technique, and then it's more easy to apply. If you're used to doing affirmations, it'll work for you. But I don't think it's absolutely necessary. But I say if you wanted to use one, clarity now, I am aware now. If you think it's a dream, I'm lucid in my dream right now, and that could definitely help. And as you were saying, even just journaling, your journals do it. If you pay attention, like this is a good example. You know, the student in my course right now, coaching him on making sure you journal your dreams, making sure that you, and he's like, that's not so important. Like, no.
Yes,
it is. That he was like, you know, should I do, how much do I journal? He was more like saying, how much do I journal? Do I journal a lot? I was like, no, journal everything you can, even how the building looks. Yes. Journal every single detail you can remember. And, because when you make that intention to journal your dreams, even the details that don't seem important, It primes your consciousness to be aware enough, to remember enough, to journal.
Mm-hmm.
And like the next day or two, he said, Darryl, he said, I was in my dream, and a friend was talking to me in my dream, and I thought, I need to pay attention to this so I could journal it and do my dream journal. He thought that in the dream.
I love it.
The example of how it takes if you focus on making sure you journal. And I want to make sure I mention this as well, because somebody, I got a communication the other day where somebody was unable to find the books in the bookstores, both Travel For and Classes on the Course in Miracles. They're on Amazon, so they're not in bookstores yet. I hope to be able to get them in bookstores in the future, but it is a process to get that done. So maybe in a few years, I might have them in bookstores.
That's
but right now, they're at Amazon. And you buy the paperback, the Kindle comes free. So if you're interested in Out of Body, it's Travel Far. If it's Spirituality, Inner Peace, it's Classes on the Course in Miracles. And you buy the paperback, they're both free at Amazon, but they're not in bookstores yet. And, you know, but I just wanted to make sure I threw that out, because apparently they were looking for a little while, going to different bookstores. So I was like, I wanted to make sure I mentioned it's not in bookstores, it isn't at Amazon, so
and
people won't be looking for it in bookstores yet.
Right. You know, I did mention it in my introduction, too. I have to thank you, Darryl. This has been a lot of fun. I finally got a chance to really talk in depth about one of my favorite topics, and something I've been doing a long time. I know of a very good show I'm going to recommend you to them, okay? And I'll be in touch and we'll talk about it. But thank you. Once again, I have to go. Ladies and gentlemen, the website, one more time, is DarrylEBerryJr.com, as well as NextDensity.com. Go ahead and learn about everything he's doing. Please tell people who are interested if you travel in circles who discuss these activities openly. Thank you for being here, Darryl. It's been a pleasure.
It was a pleasure for me as well. Thanks for having me. And I'll look forward to next time.
Okay. That sounds good. All right, then. Until next time, everyone, God bless and be at peace.
Adding the choice of a crispy chicken BLT to Wendy's 4 for $4 is the biggest thing since rappers trying to sing.
I got me a yacht and I sound like a robot.
But do you like the sound of this? Wendy's 4 for $4 now comes with a choice of a junior bacon cheeseburger or a crispy chicken BLT.
From Detroit to Macon, I keep it crisp like bacon.
Both are topped with crispy applewood smoked bacon and come with 4 nuggets, fries, and a Coke for just $4.
Oh, yeah.
At participating Wendy's for a limited time, meal includes small fries and a drink. Not valid in Alaska and Hawaii.
Now at the Home Depot, save 20% with bulk pricing on GAF high-definition shingles and 30% with bulk pricing on insulation. That'll bring that roofing project down within reach. And that insulation project, you'll be covered. If you're ready to start, now you know where. Get bulk pricing on shingles and insulation only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. See store for details and minimum purchase quantities. Selection varies by store.